interesting here.
Yeah. I think they do things like that. The reason we wanted just a quick caucus is we want to make sure not to conflate two components about the clinical assistant professors, right? The first component is how do we add new things to the positions in the bargaining unit, right? And we're in agreement with everything you've outlined about Article 8 and that the university can do that independently with PERC, and then the UFF retains the right to, you know, participate, object if they need to, right? About in union. So we think it's perfectly fine to go forward with the establishing those position codes and contacting PERC if you've discussed, right? The second component of that we want to make sure not to conflate is what to do with the faculty who are currently in those 9,003 positions, right? And we're not really prepared to talk about today. If maybe you could tell us about your process from switching them from a 9,003 position code to a new position code. And that's kind of a separate issue.
I don't even know what would, like, how would it affect anybody?
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen their contracts. I don't know what you know they were kind of given. I don't really know, like, the details of the contracts that they have received, right?
Maybe if nothing else, we should clarify with them that the affected faculty that in case you were wondering, no, you're not in a tenure earnings position. We will make it very clear that you're in this position over here. Because that's our fear, is that they're going to come up to us and say, oh, we discovered that we're 9003, so we should be in the unit. And
I think probably if we look at their offer letters, it all says in there non-tenure earning.
Yeah.
Well, would that be helpful?
Yeah, so maybe what we need to is find out with them. What their expectations
so,
are.
So that's our response, is to kind of separate those two components. But for putting those... getting those new position codes from PERC in the contract, we think that's perfectly fine.
Okay. In the promotional issue, I just have a couple of questions.
Sure.
One is the kind of time and successful evaluations. You get a flat rate increase.
Mm-hmm.
If we go to the review process with the dossier, it's a percentage?
Yes. Yeah.
And maybe just if we're asked why the distinction?
Absolutely. So the reason that path A is the automatic trigger one.
Okay.
The reason path A has the flat rate is because that does not reflect putting forward a file or enhanced criteria, right? Well, what the contract says right now for tenure criteria is that departments can, enact enhanced criteria on their own, and you know they're defining their criteria in addition to just annual evaluations. Right? Specifically, the tenure contract says it can't be based just on. It's not simply a summary of your annual evaluations, right?
Right.
So the reason that is 13%, that's the standard we've established for promotions, right? Like that we increased. So right now, assistant and associate professors are all at 13%, and library faculty as well. So this puts us in line with that, with the promotion one, with the file would bring instructors and lecturers into the same percentage increase as the other individuals who submit a file. The reason this one is 5,000 is because it doesn't reflect a file, and it's just triggered automatically based on what they were, already generated.
Okay. My next question is, we have a process of promotion now, and the process of promotion now has a limited membership eligibility on committees to review. Would we be envisioning creating a new tier of committees that have a different makeup?
Yeah, that's one of our items on here,
okay.
Because that's where the rubber meets the road. It's about two-thirds of the way down, maybe 8 or 9. right now, in order to serve on a college personnel committee or a university personnel committee, you have to be a tenured faculty member.
Right.
So that it will potentially create a situation where you only have a tenured faculty member evaluating instructors and lecturers, non-tenured faculty, and that can cause problems on that, correct application of criteria. So we've in our MOU, we proposed either one of two options. One is that they would go through, if the university prefers, if that is the standard, and they go through the established pathway, you know, we could work with that. Or the what other universities do is that they established the equivalent of college personnel committees and university personnel committees that are comprised only of instructors and lecturers of non-tenure line faculty, right? So it's essentially creating a parallel structure of non-tenure line faculty. I would imagine on the departmental level, that would be unchanged, because currently all full-time faculty fill out evaluations. Like when I was a full professor last year, you know, we have instructors and lecturers, everyone who are filling out evaluations. But for tenure, only tenured faculty vote anonymously for that, right? So I would imagine that would pretty much stay the same of on the departmental level, where everyone fills out an evaluation. And there would be no tenure vote because it's not for tenure. Right. So it would just be creating a college personnel committee and a university personnel committee for instructors and lecturers.
And that could be comprised of everybody.
These are options. You could either open up the university personnel, current university personnel committee to include both tenured and untenured faculty. Mm-hmm. My personal preference would probably be to establish a separate personnel committee specifically for file review of non-tenure faculty comprised of non-tenured faculty.
Right, right. And I get, but I guess that would, I would think it's, let's say we know that when you start the process in the department, mm-hmm. only tenured faculty vote?
Okay, so when someone's going up just for tenure and promotion, and they're usually going up simultaneously, right?
Yeah.
For promotion to associate professor and tenure.
They take two votes.
Yeah, so it's two different reviews. Like so the first review is just a review from all full-time faculty, right? Whether they are assistant professors, instructors, or lecturers. And that's just on the promotion. But the tenure, that's not anonymous, right? That goes in the file.
Okay.
The tenure vote is anonymous, and it's only by people who have filed, who have gotten tenure in the department, and they're voting yes or no, right? That's like a yes. And that's anonymous.
All right, now, the third one might be more difficult to explain, but you mentioned that we would have to go into certain areas of the contract and address processes, such as layoff. Mm-hmm. Now, and the way I interpreted that, tell me if I'm wrong, is that there would be an order of layoff, an order of recall that would probably be by rank?
Yeah, the way that the order of layoff works now, layoff and recall on 31, it itemizes, if I'm remembering correctly, if I remember right, it itemizes like...
Yeah, 31, 14.2?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me see if I understand this. All instructors and lecturers and all these other people would go first.
Right. Well, right. But the only thing we would change is that essentially an associate lecturer would have seniority over a regular lecturer, right? An assistant lecturer, right?
And so if you have a lecturer that's okay, it gets confused and a little confusing.
Yeah.
We have a lecturer that's been here for 12 years, mm-hmm. and they've earned a multi-year contract.
Mm-hmm.
And you have somebody who's been here 5 years, but promoted. Mm-hmm. The lower rank on the multi-year would go.
Oh, well, two items. If I remember correctly, on the multi-year contracts, they don't provide protection in a layoff scenario.
Okay.
Like so the fact that they're on a multi-year contract, I'm just trying to remember correctly. Like that wouldn't affect it, right? It's the same thing with, you know, like a tenured professor right now, right? Or if you have an assistant, we have instructors who will approach us sometimes and say, how come this assistant professor who's been here 2 years has seniority over me, who's an instructor who's been here for 25 in the order of layoff, right? So it's the same kind of scenario. Yeah. And
it's just that it's not what we're doing now with instructors and lecturers, so that's...
Yeah, because they don't have any, there's no, it's just time and rank, right?
Just time.
Yeah.
Just time and service.
Time and service, yeah. But if someone were to achieve a higher rank, then they would have seniority again, layoff and recall. And I just mentioned that as just an example of some of the things that we would have to consider
in
the contract.
Go ahead, we're going to say.
No,
what?
I was going to read this and see if we have
okay.
any questions.
Go ahead.
Can I do that?
Yeah, please.
One thing you might want to, just going back to the second question, we might want to think about as we're moving forward is that that when it comes to personnel committees, it sometimes, at least my experience has been that if you have tenure track folks and non-tenure track folks, particularly if it's about money, it's like merit payouts, the long knives come out. And the poor untenured bastards. So you've got to essentially create a separate pot of money and let the non-tenured folks have their own little separate subcommittee, because otherwise they're never going to get anything.
For merit.
Say,
for merit.
Yeah, for merit. For that matter.
Like the promotion structure.
For promotion structure. You know, in other words, it ought to truly be a peer-driven process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, the challenge in the transition on that is... We're not going to have anybody who at an associate instructor level to serve initially, because no one will have been promoted up
exactly.
through.
And that may be, that's a good point.
Right. You know,
and we may have a department that is one instructor.
Yeah. True.
Right.
So you may have to make some exceptions, but my point is we want to be sensitive to that issue where we can.
You don't want full professors saying this person hasn't published anything, I'm voting no.
Right.
And you're saying, well, but that's not part of their contract. But thankfully, in this method, a lot of that is left up to the departments. I mean, this is shared governance. The departments have to define enhanced criteria in their departmental bylaws for instructors and lecturers. So there's actually less for us to bargain in the files, in our proposal of the file submission format, outside of the MOU. It's not like we don't have to get way down in the details in the contract.
So. I have a question.
Yeah.
Relates to what you just said. So for the rest of the world, this information, I think, is included in the tenure promotion and evaluation packet. I call it the packet, but do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That document. So why would we have this one by MOU? Because we have that, and maybe very well a good explanation, but
the memorandum.
So what we do for all of our other people is we have a set of guidelines, tenure, promotion, and evaluation, and actually that covers instructors too at the present time. And so I don't know why we would have an MOU.
But not for first of all, that's one of the components of the MOU, right? The MOU is saying
go look at that.
That all of the invested. I think that's the only old copy of the MOU that I have, but I can. It might be helpful just to kind of walk through why we have the MOU the components of it. So I think this will answer your question because the MOU does recognize that document that you're referencing, right? So first, it's just saying item one says it will go that they will create this, and for example, including research associates and clinical faculty, assuming, of course, that they're non-tenure line, right? And we get those in there. And that when it will go into effect in 2019, 2020, right? So it's, and then these are the available positions, right? All the way, the same ones, instructor to associate instructor, university instructor, et cetera, et cetera. Again, saying that none of them will be required to seek promotion during their careers at UWF. Then this is the document we mentioned. University criteria for promotion will be defined in the Division of Academic Affairs policies and procedures for tenure promotion, annual evaluation, and sustained performance evaluation. Individual department units may also create enhanced departmental unit criteria that will be outlined in individual department unit bylaws. Right. So, we're absolutely in agreement that document will contain that criteria, right? And then that it has to be created there. The reason they have an MOU is specifically to say it's going to be in that document and it's going to be created along those lines, right? So, like, we don't just say, okay, well, we're stepping away, and all of a sudden, you know, the administration might say, well, you know what, we decided to do it this other way, right? And we're like, no, it says here, this is the process, right? Let's see, the membership of any, and there has to be a task, because we have a TNP task force, right, that proposes revisions to that document, right? And so 5 just says that the membership of any task force, right, it has to be inclusive of, but not limited to, faculty represented from all colleges, UFF, and administration, right? So it has to be an inclusive task force that goes through defining that criteria in that document, right? This says 2018-2019 is when departments have to complete their criteria by. All of the criteria has to conform to Article 15 promotion procedure. And that's the way our contract works in the promotion procedure article. It doesn't differentiate between positions. It just says all promotions have to follow this criteria, right? So this just reiterates that it has to follow that criteria. And this is the boilerplate language that's already just reiterated here, saying that it's not simply a totaling of a faculty member's annual performance evaluations, right? Saying they had to put forward a file, and this is what to your question earlier, the evaluation progression process of the file will either mirror the review process for tenure line faculty, or the university will establish non-tenure line review committees that serve in a file review capacity similar to the college personnel committees in the UPC, right? It's going to go one path with the other. And then just the same thing, that it's mirrored with our tenure line faculty, that it will be five years of employment, although they could go up early and after 4 years, right? That's what we have currently for tenure line faculty. The 11 is just about that ability to go up if they want to. The one thing we did add in, on 12 is, well, what do you do about these people who have been here for 15 years, 20 years as instructors or lecturers, right? Like, you know, do they, are they going to have to, you know, go up for associate and then wait another 5 or 6 years and go up for full, right? Knowing faculty, some faculty will say, well, can't we just get both promotions simultaneously, right? You know, and that seems that the university would not allow for that. At the same time, we've included a caveat that if they have 10 or more years in rank when this goes into effect, you know, first they would go up for the associate level increase, and then they would have a shorter window. They could go up for full after just 3 years, right? So they have a little bit of a shorter window. They don't have to wait another 5 or 6 years to go up to the third rank if it's been a meritorious, you know, performance, right? So that gives them a little bit of a shorter window, you know.
For the first elevation, for the first promotion.
Yeah, right? This is one time only. Okay. Well, for
right?
When we implemented multi-year contracts,
right,
that went into effect almost immediately, right? Because it was once you showed 3 years of successful, excellent, or better, right?
Right.
So that went in pretty quickly. The rollout schedule here. So what you're asking, I think, is about rollout schedule, right?
No, actually, I was saying, in other words, your first promotion would be, if you're here 15 years, would be after 3 years, but the next one would go back.
This program, as we proposed it in the MOU. It goes into effect in 2019, 2020.
Right.
So
okay.
At fall 2019, if I have 5 years in rank at that time, or I want to go up early after 4 years in rank at 2019, 2020, I can go up in 2019, 2020.
You can go up right then.
Right then at 2019. But I have to have 5 years in rank.
Got it.
And the rollout is, it's going to take a couple of years before, the preparation for it, I should say. It's just going to take a couple of years before this goes live. That's why we have it as 2019, 2020.
Right? Time for everybody to get ready.
Yeah, you got to get the criteria defined. Departments have to define theirs. People have to prepare their files, et cetera.
Okay.
Right? So.
Then how did your 3 years kick in?
So. Let's say I go up at 2019, 2020.
Okay.
And, well, okay, let's see, sorry. At 2019, 2020, I have 10 years in rank.
Okay.
Okay? So I go up in 2019, 2020, and I'm promoted to associate, right?
Okay.
Under normal standards, it would be another 5 years before I could go up for full, right? What we're proposing is if at 2019, 2020, you already have 10 years in rank, you could go up after 3 years for the full component.
For the second
promotion. It's just a shorter window for the second promotion. Now, of course, you would have to meet all the criteria. It's not like the criteria is lessened. But it just gives them a little bit of shorter, recognizing that they already had 10 years.
Okay. It's good that you explained that. I actually didn't understand that.
Well, it's not a hugely essential component of the...
Okay.
The thing, but it's just something we thought of. And then it's just here saying also that it still be 13% for the promotion. Now, of course, that would be reflected in Article 25, right, in the promotion guidelines. And then just saying, you know, of course, UFF has the right, which is, we really don't even probably need 14 on here because UFF already has the right to participate in the establishment of, you know, criteria and things like that, right? So that one might not even be necessary on there. So that's a long, very long-winded answer to your question of why do we need an MOU, right? Our view is that we need this MOU to outline all of this process and participation role. But we are absolutely acknowledging that this stuff is going to be reflected in departmental bylaws and in that tenure promotion document.
Okay. All right, cool.
Gotcha.
I don't really have anything else.
Can I ask you, is the impression you get that the university's interest is more towards this file submission format than the automatic trigger format?
I think it's the file.
The file, okay.
But I don't know where it'll land, but we're going to go back and have another conversation. Then next time we meet, we'll have responses to this and what else you have on the table.
Yeah, the only things we had on the table were, you know, we've proposed clarifications that we think are helpful for the SPE.
Yeah.
Right. We have one more quick, just to anticipate.
Okay.
We talked a little bit about in conference. This is last week, the Bureau of Labor Statistics released the CPIU for the year. In our Article 25 salaries, it says salary increase for 25-2016, effective the first pay period of March 1st, 2017, right, which is this March, the university will provide a cost of living base wage increase based on the most recent completed calendar year consumer price index, CPIU amount. Now, if you look at C, there's a caveat that says the cost of living adjustment increase will be reduced by the amount of any base salary increase provided by the Florida legislature of the same year, right? So
pretty humorous.
Yeah.
I was going to say you probably ought to amend that for the same decade. But.
Yeah. So the CPIU was released over the last 12 months. It's risen 2.1% before seasonal adjustment. Daniel, who was our financial person, said that the Bureau of Labor Statistics will release a revised, kind of a permanent version here in February, right, of that amount. The legislature did not provide an increase. So in March, it's going to, you know, our reading on this is it's a 2.1% increase for the university, revised slightly by what they release in February. But we feel like it's important to talk about these things now before we get closer to them.
Well, let me take this back, Jonathan.
Sure.
Read it. And, I'm not a labor economist.
Yeah.
Even though I appear to be one every now and then.
You play one on at Holiday Inn or something?
I was,
Well, our views is pretty straightforward. The contract specifically says CPIU and of the completed calendar year, which we specifically clarified, you know, and both of which were at the initiation of the university's team. And we proposed CPIW and other things, you know. So those were both things that we think is pretty clear in the contract.
Okay, well, let me take it back and take a look at it. I guess that's all we have. So,
do you have any additional thoughts on the people coming back into unit and whether or not the contract is silent or not, and whether or not, remember we were talking about the language, people move from out of unit back into unit, from administrative positions back to faculty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a complicated issue.
Okay.
And that's something I'm going to have to address next time. It's just something we didn't get to this time because we're kind of knocking this concept away.
Sure. Well, our position is the contract is silent on it, and I think that's what's been implemented. I was just genuinely interested what your guys' thoughts
were. Okay, I'll find that out.
Well, now we could do like our chapter of Pensacola State offered to do a couple of years ago, just wipe all the administration's privileges out of the contract, I think they put a clause on the table.
They proposed that if you're out of unit more than five years, you give up your tenure in the department.
Right. It was the same. That got their attention. Why do you guys want to do that?
Yeah. So that interesting. All right.
Who did that?
Okay, I'm stopping the tape, so we're no.
Pensacola State. Asian and Blaine.